Jamie and Locker with you here on the Green Zone on this Wednesday afternoon. I've waited till now to broach the subject, Locker. I would like to apologize to you for the end of the show yesterday. I really thought the Oilers were going to win the game.
No, you didn't.
I really did.
You did not.
They were taking on the Sabres.
You were being
at home. Nope.
Yeah, you were.
I was not. You were. Felt it in my core that the Oilers were going to win three straight games.
Here's the thing.
Locker literally left here. He was out of the building before I wrapped up the show yesterday when I said guaranteed Oilers win. And he's like, well, put his headset on. I saw him drive away as I was leaving the studio. He was mad.
Here's the thing about the advantage that I have on this program. This is a show that's been around for a long time, about 162 years. And the people of Saskatchewan are well aware of you and who you are.
I'm a sarcastic.
Well, and you do not need to have a picture or a video of Jamie Nye to hear when he is being
a sarcastic jackwagon.
Yes. You can hear it in his voice. It's one of your many gifts.
I didn't think I had many.
Well,
gifts.
I was going to say a few, but then I thought, well,
that would have been rude.
And we don't want to start the show that way.
So when I said,
I knew they were going to have problems. Buffalo is one of those teams this year. They do not have a team that's going to go the distance. They don't. Again, they need more help. They need someone to get
Quinn
in there.
Hughes, maybe.
Well, here's the thing. The difference between this team and maybe a 3 or 4 years ago Buffalo Sabres is that there's some pride on this team. And I haven't watched a lot of games, but they play hard. And they've been surprising some teams this year.
Well, they beat both games against the Edmonton Oilers.
And they outplayed the Edmonton Oilers in the first and second period. And then the Oilers woke up in the third and made it a decent game. And then they got caught with their pants down like 35 seconds into the overtime period. But I knew that last night was a trap game. I knew it because they're starting to feel a little bit good about themselves.
And I guaranteed a win yesterday. That didn't help the Oilers' cause either.
No. But I knew what you were doing.
I didn't intend to cause Locker any harm in guaranteeing a win last night.
There you go. Alex Tuck and Darlene. Here's Tuck in front. Scores! Sabres in overtime salvage it in Edmonton, and they take 2 points from the Oilers.
4-3 overtime loss. The Sabres were up 3-0, and then the Oilers came back in the third period. McDavid scored with 2 seconds left to force overtime. Not the banner night of Evan Bouchard. With a bad giveaway in the second period, might as well have just wrapped it around and scored on Stuart Skinner himself.
Well, and then he was out of position on that final goal too.
Yep. Well, yeah. Most of them were out of position on that final goal for the Buffalo Sabres.
Wow, the whole line was, yeah.
Who ended the Oilers' shot at their longest win streak of the season. Edmonton was looking for a third straight victory.
Although last night's matchups had something really, really bizarre last night happen. It was, and we'll play the McDavid goal here. This was one of four historic goals from last night.
Seneca brings it into the Pittsburgh zone with 2 seconds left. Tries to get it into the goal crease. He scored!
Marner up top. Through traffic, off sticks. They score! Pavel Dorofeev!
Shot! Rebound! Score! Connor McDavid with 1 second!
McCarr, a head fake and a shot. Score! Cale Makar rips it home with 8
seconds to go.
So you had four goals that were tying goals in the final 15 seconds of the game last night out of all of the action last night, and you just heard them all. So there was a tying goal for the Ducks against the Penguins. There was a tying goal for the Knights in the dying seconds against the Islanders. You heard Connor McDavid's goal there with like 1.9 seconds left on the clock. And then the Avalanche forced overtime against the Nashville Predators with a goal by Cale Makar in the dying seconds of the period as well. And I looked it up there because I was looking at the headlines this morning, and I was like, man, there's been way more overtime and shootout games this year. There has to have been, and it is. It is up considerably this year, and last night was no exception. It's been exciting hockey.
Which is why the standings are so compressed, because
you get all those one-point games.
Yeah, one-point game, and there's
three-point games where one team's getting two and the other one's getting one.
So it's compressed the standings for sure.
A loss last night for the Oilers, they still went up like 2-3 spots in the standings with that 1 point.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Weird that only one of the four who tied the game did win in overtime, though. It was Anaheim in a shootout.
The Ducks. What's his name? That kid that's lighting it up in the Ducks right now. He had a beautiful shootout goal.
Was it Carlson? Yeah.
He looks good.
Now let's go to baseball. Pete Alonso is joining the AL East. And no, it's not the Blue Jays.
Swing and a ball drilled. Right field. At the wall. Out of here. Alonso, an opposite field home run. And that's ripped out to left center. Forget that. What a shot by Alonso into the second deck.
Yes, the New York Mets have lost their slugger. The Baltimore Orioles, the reports are, will sign him to a 5-year, $155 million contract. So over $30 million a year, $31 million a year, which will be the highest paid first baseman in terms of average per year salary. Last year, Alonso, 31 years old, 38 home runs, 41 doubles, 126 RBIs. The O's, of course, trying to invest again. They had over 100 wins in 2023. They won the division second last year with 91 wins, and last season sucked. They only had 75 wins, so they're trying to get back into the top of the AL East. So just more competition for the Blue Jays to try to repeat.
We'll move on to the CFL. It doesn't look good for Trey Ford in Edmonton.
And sometimes, you know, the opportunities may be elsewhere. And you know, we have to look at that as a situation that maybe it is a case that works for Trey. I mean, he's got a ton of ability. But, you know, sometimes a fresh start is the best start for some guys in this business.
I had mentioned to Jamie earlier today, I said, would Trey Ford be a good fit in Saskatchewan? Because he's on the move here. There's no way. After a comment like that.
No, that was on 880 Chad with the play-by-play guy, Morley Scott. And Ed Hervey has always been sometimes honest to a fault, but I appreciate the honesty. At least he's just willing to say
it. I think it's easier to appreciate it when you're not in the market.
I guess so.
Maybe.
Although I'd love it if J.O. was opened the door a little bit
more.
But that's not going to happen. But Trey Ford in Saskatchewan?
You were not.
I just.
No, not a fit, eh?
Not at the expense of creating the drama that Edmonton's living. Like, so many people, Trey Ford, gotta get Trey. Like, if Trevor has a hiccup in three, are people going to be clamoring for Trey Ford? And I know you had to look for the future, and he's a young quarterback, and he's exciting, and maybe put all that other stuff aside, but also, he was a losing quarterback at Edmonton. They gave him starting money, and he's still a losing quarterback. So does he have the win factor? I'm not so sure anymore. He's exciting as all get out, but sometimes that doesn't equal wins. But you wouldn't mind if the Riders chased him a little bit.
Well, potentially. I think I would take Jake just because of, like, I mean, I'm not an expert on quarterbacks by any stretch, so I don't know how the two games compare, right? Like, I don't know what Jake's skill is versus Trey Ford's skill. I'm suggesting that if Jake decided that he wanted more opportunity because he wasn't going to get that QB1 spot here in Saskatchewan, and he was going to move on, that I think he would look at a guy. Here's the thing about Trey Ford. I mean, I don't think you can compare their games, Jake and Trey, no, but I think you can compare their personality and the type of guys they are. And from all accounts, from everything that I've heard, when I was in Edmonton, there was a lot of talk about him, and people really liked that kid. Like, they thought he was just—he was a real stand-up, great teammate.
Trey and his brother are
solid
dudes,
and that to me is what this team in Saskatchewan looks for. They look for quality characters, and he might be a guy. And maybe Ed's right. Maybe, you know what? You take a back seat to a veteran like Trevor. It might work, right? Because what does Trey give this team that Trevor doesn't? A little bit of movement out of the pocket.
Well, a lot more movement for when you compare Trey to
and he gets himself Trevor Harris, he gets himself into trouble.
Yes, he does. Yep. But his contract does not work. Like, he's getting a lot of money to be the backup quarterback.
Yeah.
This might be, they might have to release him instead of trade him, because I'm not sure any team can really take on that salary that Trey Ford's. He's making starter money. But it's interesting to hear Ed Hervey just come right out and say it. Maybe it's a fresh start's the best place for Trey Ford. And we wrap things up. We heard from Jamarcus Hardrick yesterday, signed a one-year deal. He's ready to run it back.
I just love coming to work. I love where I'm at. I love what we did last year, and I want a chance to earn it again.
Hardrick coming off a year where he won Offensive Lineman of the Year. It's a one-year extension for the offensive lineman. And he did say he's keeping in touch with a lot of the potential free agents, is trying to keep that band back together. Still to come on the Green Zone, Tommy Stevens will be here with us in the 3 o'clock hour to talk about his contract extension with the Riders and his plans in Saskatchewan this winter. Coming up next here on the Green Zone, the NHL Board of Governors had a special presentation yesterday from the FBI. We'll dig into that story next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. They say the hotter rock and roll is still beating. And for what I've seen, I believe them. Now the other may be barely breathing. Jamie and Locker with the ear of the Green Zone. Yesterday, the NHL Board of Governors meetings wrapped up, and they got a special visit from the FBI.
Can we just put a sort of a clarification on it? Because I thought the FBI went to the NHL and said, hey, we should sit down and have a meeting. And then when I heard
What happened? This is what's going on with the NHL. The NHL is inviting the FBI into the meetings to go over the rules, recommendations, advice.
You see the distinction there,
on gambling within, and this is all stems from the NBA. The NBA went through it.
Yeah.
And the FBI is now helping the NHL go, here are the rules. This is what you need to do. When someone asks you this question, they might not just be in a buddy pondering. These are things you need to be thinking of.
Aware of, yeah.
When they're,
but in my mind.
And report it. And they want you to report it to the National Hockey League. Gary Bettman also said today, try if you want to. We're going to catch you. Like, they monitor every single bet on every single game in the National Hockey League, as every sport is doing. And here's the question today. Is gambling in sports making it a better experience for fans? Is it improving fan engagement? Is it improving how you watch sports? Is it improving how you participate with sports?
Does our opinion, you and I, count? Because you and I both oddly don't gamble.
Well, does fantasy football count as gambling? That's the most I gamble.
Technically, but I guess not.
But
really.
Do you think it improves the experience for fans?
See, I don't do it. I just get so anxious because
so as someone who doesn't, does it get in the way? Because every halftime, it's who you should bet and how much, and here's the prop bet on over-under yardage for throwing for Trevor Harris.
I enjoy sports. I don't need to have money or skin in the game in order to enjoy a hockey game or a football game on the weekend.
I think it's getting in the way. I think it's getting into the way, and I think it is starting to chip away at the integrity of it. I know there's money to be made. I know that through sponsorships and everything else.
Yeah.
But the integrity, and Gary Bettman said it yesterday, integrity of your game is the most important thing, and it is. And I'm starting to feel it chipped away, and that's dangerous.
That they're taking steps like this to get in front of it, right? By inviting the FBI to have a conversation about the things that they need to watch out for.
1-877-332-8255.
Oh yeah, life goes on long after the thrill of living is gone.
Jamie and Locker with you here in the Green Zone on this Wednesday afternoon. Highways around the province much better than they were yesterday, though snow is coming, wind is coming overnight and into the evening. Already someone texting in some areas to go, hey, remember, if you have auto lights on, just turn them on, please. With the blustery conditions around Saskatchewan.
You know my thoughts on that.
Yeah.
If we're starting there, we're in trouble.
Still to come, Tommy Stevens is going to join us, the Rough Riders short yardage quarterback with a 2-year contract extension, and he's going to stick around Saskatchewan this winter. But right now, we're going to talk about Lockers, Buffalo Bills, a big game coming up again against the New England Patriots, their division rival, two games back right now. Sal Capaccio is the sideline reporter for WGR 550 Radio in Buffalo, just off the news conference with head coach Sean McDermott. What's the big story coming out of Buffalo today?
The Bills are getting a bit healthier. You know, they've been dealing with a lot of injuries this year, and they still are. They have a lot of guys on injured reserve that aren't coming back, or could still come back a little bit later. But as far as the guys on the active roster that have missed some time, four players who all missed last Sunday's game. Joey Bosa, that was a big miss for them. You know, a guy that they missed a lot, I should say, not being able to generate a pass rush. Hamstring injury, he's limited on Wednesday, so he's back at practice, but limited. That's good. Spencer Brown missed with his shoulder injury, right tackle. Joshua Palmer with his ankle injury, wide receiver. And the other was Terrell Bernard, linebacker, elbow injury. So all these guys are limited, which is good news, because when you start the week limited, that means you are already on track to maybe get a little bit more work in, and then we'll see where it goes by Sunday.
So I'm curious about Sean, the head coach. You get the sense that he's kind of the same guy in front of the mic that he is off the mic. Am I wrong?
And what sense do you mean? I think he's very buttoned up in front of a mic, but he's also, I think personality-wise, Sean is just a reserved personality.
Is he? Okay, yeah.
You definitely get that. You know what I mean? But he just doesn't give you anything, you know, when he's behind the mic. He's really opened up a lot over the last year or so, though, I'll say that. His personality's kind of shown through a little bit more. He's been a little bit more, I guess, forthcoming with the media than he has. But
he was likable in Hard Knocks. Like I kind of.
He's a very likable guy.
Yeah.
Very likable guy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Without the Chiefs, Sal, they look like they're going to miss the playoffs. Is this the best chance the Bills have ever had with Josh Allen at quarterback to get to the dance in February?
It's hard to say that when Josh Allen walked off the field leading with 13 seconds left in a divisional round game, right? And a chance to play the AFC Championship game at home against the Bengals. So I think that, you know, it's hard to say knowing what you know with hindsight, but going into the playoffs, I think that's probably true. But guys, I mean, as much as there's going to be no Chiefs in Mahomes, no Burrow in the Bengals, maybe no Lamar in the Ravens, the Bills also have put themselves in a position where they're not going to have any home games in the playoffs, maybe. And they got to play that first week again. You know, I mean, this was the year to try and get the one seed and be home and have off that first week to get some, you know, guys that are injured and get them back. And if they have to go on the road for three straight games, I think that's a tough task for anybody. It doesn't matter who their quarterback is.
Outside of the road, you know, warrior trip through the playoffs here, what else concerns you about this Bills squad, Sal?
Well, I think stopping the run, obviously, especially late in the season, it's been an issue all year. They're better at it lately, and one of the things that's happened lately is Shaq Thompson's been playing middle linebacker over Terrell Bernard, who's been hurt, and he's been better than Terrell Bernard at that spot. And it's the way I've described it is I think it's a very uncomfortable decision coming up for the Bills. Terrell Bernard is your team captain. He's a good player. They just extended him. He's a young player. They're paying him a lot of money. And he's good, but he's also a bit different for the way the game is being played now, how people want to attack the Bills and what Shaq Thompson brings. And Shaq Thompson has done a better job because that role has changed a bit. So I wonder what happens when Bernard is healthy. Now, that said, with Shaq Thompson out there, the Bills have been better at stopping the run. They're going to get that Oliver back, hopefully, for the playoffs. It feels like that is the case from what McDermott told us a couple of weeks ago. So maybe they can get better against the run. But that's the biggest concern. And then, you know, the thing that's happened every year with the Bills, part of the reason why they've lost the playoffs is getting no pass rush. And we didn't see a pass rush last week without Joey Bosa. If they don't have a healthy Joey Bosa, I don't know where they're getting a pass rush run. And even with a healthy Joey Bosa, they have to be able to be better than that than they have been.
Sal Capaccio joining a sideline reporter for the Buffalo Bills. Of course, WGR 550 in New York. So the loss to the Patriots a few weeks ago, now they got the Patriots again. How big is this game? Or do you think that last loss 2 weeks ago had the AFC East and the one seed slip through their fingers? Or is there, you know, a miracle that could happen here where the New England Patriots slipped down the stretch?
I don't think it'd be a miracle if they slipped, but it's certainly not likely, right? I mean, you have to think considering the way they're playing, but, you know, they have some guys banged up too. They are coming off a bye week, so they'll have a couple weeks to prepare for the Bills. But here's what has to happen, guys. The Bills have to, if the Bills lose to the Patriots Sunday, the Patriots are, it's a hat and t-shirt game, right? They're handing out championship t-shirts and hats that they won the AFC East, and the Bills' reign is over for this time period. The Bills win. They have to still hope the Patriots lose one more game in the division. They do have the Jets and the Dolphins coming up. And from that perspective, it feels like it's not going to happen. But the Dolphins are playing better, and they do play the last week of the year. The Bills would still have to win out. The Patriots still have to play the Ravens as well, and that would give the Bills a little wiggle room as well. So while it does feel unlikely, if they win this week, the AFC East is still in the window. They could do that. There would be three games left, and they'd have to basically win two and have the Patriots lose one. And that could happen as long as the Patriots lose that division game. Then it comes down to some tiebreakers, common opponents. It does feel like the one seed is probably not going to happen even in that case, but then you'd have to have Denver lose a couple games. I remember just a few years ago, I'm old enough to remember, guys, when just a couple years ago, the Bills, they had to make up that same kind of ground against the Miami Dolphins, and they did, and they won that Week 18 Sunday night game and won the division that year. So you just keep playing until, you know, you never know, and but they're at least in a position where they're going to make the playoffs, it feels. But as far as the one seed, probably pretty unlikely. It is still possible for the division, but they absolutely have to win. It's mathematically you have to win Sunday.
Over the last 8 years, the Bills have made the playoffs seven times. If they get back to the playoffs, Sal, is it James Cook or Josh Allen that is the biggest reason why?
Ooh, well, I think it's hard to ever say it's not Josh Allen, but I do think James Cook deserves consideration for NFL Offensive Player of the Year. I just can't believe the season he's putting together and the amount of carries they're giving him, and he's been rewarding them, right? He gets paid in the offseason, and I'll admit, I was wrong. I said there's no way he's ever going to be a bell cow back. He's only 200 pounds. He couldn't withstand that. Guys, he leads the NFL in carries. It's crazy to think about. 249, I was looking at it today. So it's a good question. I would never say it's not because of Josh Allen. I think, to me, like James Cook's success, a lot of that is because Josh is such a threat both running and passing, and I don't want to take away from James Cook. I don't think Josh's success is based on James Cook as much as James is on Josh's, if that makes sense.
That's fair, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Josh keeps the defense honest in guarding against the running back. There's no doubt about that.
Cook has looked so good this year, though. Like,
he has.
He's just tearing the field up.
Okay, awesome. We've been having this conversation since the Chiefs lost this last weekend. Sal, you can't pick the Bills. You can't pick the Bills.
Why can't we pick the Bills? Well, come on.
Because
he's putting rules in place here, Sal.
You have to pick a team in the AFC to be in the Super Bowl. You can't say the Buffalo Bills. What team do you think will be the most dangerous come playoff time?
I think it's the Houston Texans. Their defense is legit. It is the best defense maybe in the NFL. And they don't do it with scheme and stunts. They just line up and bully you and beat you up. And we saw that firsthand when Josh Allen took 8 sacks against them in Houston on a Thursday night a couple of weeks ago. They're good enough on offense. They don't have to be great. C.J. Stroud can have his moments where he's really good in games like that. He can have some that he's really bad. I mean, they went to Kansas City, and they did the same kind of thing. They didn't sack Mahomes like they did Josh, but Kansas City had no answers. What do they say in the playoffs, guys? Run game and defense travels. Whether you're home or on the road, you go on the playoffs, you play defense like that, you can beat anybody. I think Houston's the most dangerous team because of their defense.
A quick question here. I have we got a board where we put predictions up, and I have on the board that if the Bills win the Super Bowl, I got to jump through a table. Have you got any jumping through table tips for me?
I don't want it to be on fire.
Don't do it. I'm not a jump through table guy because I'm 52 and I'm like, I just, you know, I need to play. My son's 12 last week and I like to have fun with him and still coach his baseball team. And I'm not putting myself in a position to, you know, walk out there with a broken bone. But look, I get it. It's what people do when they want to have some fun and be crazy. So my best tip would be, don't go feet first. Make sure you go like elbow, soft landing, and have a table that's going to break. Like, make the table super easy to break, right? I mean, so stupid when I see, watch these people and they hit these tables. I'm like, well, why did you jump into something that's so hard and firm and now you're dealing with like a dislocated elbow or something?
Well,
these are really good tips.
Yeah.
Well, Sal, you sound like back in the day, you may have been a bit of a table jumper.
I will never confirm nor deny any of that, okay? But I will say that I've seen plenty of it in the parking lot.
Walker wants it to be the coldest day of the year.
So he can park.
Yeah. He's just layered up to cushion the blow. But the Bills have to get there first. It should be another entertaining game. But can you believe it's the Patriots? Like, Sal, are like only two losses and at the top of the division right now?
Yeah, I mean, I tell you, going into the year, I picked the Patriots to finish second, but not like this. Like, I thought they would be the next best team because I just thought the Dolphins would be bad, and they have been, but they're playing better, and the Jets are who the Jets are, and it's like, well, they're rebuilding again. I thought the Patriots would be a better team. I like Drake May. Mike Vrabel's going to stabilize the organization, but I thought they were a year away from really having any sort of contention with the Bills. And look, guys, this is not to criticize the Patriots because it sounds like it when I say it. You only play who's on your schedule, but they've taken advantage of a softer schedule and a fourth-place schedule, so three games on their schedule, they go against a fourth-place team instead of the Bills against a first-place team, right, in other divisions. But they did beat the Bills, too. They also beat the Bills by the Bills giving them the ball three times and them still kicking a last-second field goal. The Patriots want to play a messy game, and they've been good at it, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that from their perspective. So, yeah, I am surprised they are here right now. I'm not surprised that they would get there eventually. And, you know, Drake May's a stud, and it's going to be really fun to watch him and Josh Allen battle out here over the next several years.
Well, that is Sal Capaccio. He is the sideline reporter, WGR 550 Radio in Buffalo, New York. It's the Patriots and the Bills. I believe that's one of our games for our NFL Pick'em League locker. We're hoping you get a win this week.
Bills!
Do you think Sal ever jumped through a table?
No.
I think he did. Said he's 52.
Was it a thing 30 years ago in Buffalo? I don't know. This seems like it's more of a recent thing.
I've seen videos of guys jumping off vans at tailgates that was not footage.
Like in the Steve Tasker, Andre Reed, Bruce Smith era? Were they jumping through tables in Buffalo?
I'll look it up and find out when they started jumping through tables. This is not... It's at least 20... plus years old.
No, we're not believing Google. Sorry, Scott. We're not going to believe Google.
What did Google say?
2015. It's been longer than a decade of jumping through tables in Buffalo. I'm not going to believe that Google search. Try again, Wikipedia. Kids, don't source Wikipedia. It's not a smart move for your papers in university.
Let's try AI.
Don't get me started. Coming up next... This day in sports history, 1992, December the 10th. Two new franchises were announced for the NHL back on this day. One of them has become somewhat of a thorn in the side of Locker's Edmonton Oilers. That's next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Edbridge Farm remembers.
On this day in sports history, it was the NHL Board of Governors meetings in 1992, December the 10th. Can't wait for Locker's This Day in Sports History tomorrow from 1992, what they did on December 11th, but I don't want to give it away. But
I'll give you a hint. The curse started.
The day before in 92, the NHL awarded Two new franchises to begin the 94-95 season. One, the Anaheim Mighty Ducks, and another team awarded to South Florida.
The Panthers begin to celebrate. The Florida Panthers win their second consecutive Stanley Cup.
It all started on this day in sports history, Locker, 1992, when the Miami area, which ended up being Sunrise, Florida, were granted an NHL franchise.
Well, I will say this, and I don't want to upset Florida Panther fans with this comment, but they were much more likable when they were losing.
No, they were much more when John Van Beesbrook was in net and they made the Stanley Cup final way back in the day. Bill Lindsay potting a few goals. Ed Jovanovski.
Jovocop.
Those were the Florida Panthers I knew and loved. Now they have one of the players with the most punchable faces in the National Hockey League in Matthew Tkachuk.
Was he second?
He was third. I think Brady was second.
Brady's.
And Nick Cousins was first.
I don't know
former
if
former Panther, now sent as Ottawa Senator. A lot of punchable faces on the Ottawa Senators, apparently.
I don't know if Cousins is at the top of my list. Is he?
Because he's a dirty, cheap, you know what. Like, that just adds to the punchability.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, making up words now.
But you kind of got to have a look like Brady, no? Don't you?
I would never throw a punch because they would ragdoll me in a.